All right. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Honey Badger Radio. My name is Brian, and this is the Fireside Chat. And on today's Fireside Chat, we're going to be speaking with Mike. I'm just going to call him Mike, but his name is, is it okay if I use your name?
Sure,
Mike.
Sure.
Mike Davis, who essentially has a lot to say regarding things like parental alienation and the divorce system, I guess you could say. Is that an accurate way to describe it? And God knows what else you've been through.
All three of those. Yes,
yeah,
absolutely.
Okay. So, So let's firstly, welcome to the show. Thanks for taking the time to come on. I guess the first thing I want to know is, what's the story? Like what, what was your life before it is now?
Well, I will say that before this, I was walking around with my eyes closed in a lot of ways. So, like I told you, I met you through the, you know, or I found out about you guys through the Red Pill movie, right? Mm-hmm. And I thought it was very interesting, but it became just a way more personal as time went on, because I started to understand that even though I get all these messages that, you know, if you haven't noticed, I'm a little white, right? So I, you know, and I keep getting these messages that because of that, and I mean this, I mean, it was intellectual, but it became much more real. And I'm sure anybody else that, you know, that's going through any of this gets that. I really am not allowed to have feelings. I'm not allowed to express any emotion or upset over my child being taken from me. And I'll go in a little more detail with this, but currently right now I'm facing possible jail for contempt because I got a court order in March. And I'm not making this up. And that's why I want to make this clear. I'm very big on evidence. So, you know, if there's anybody that wanted a little more detail, I'm happy to do that because it seems almost unbelievable. But my ex-wife makes about three times what I make. And the court ordered that I owe her child support. And we're on a 50-50 schedule, which was very difficult to get to because I was starting way behind the eight ball on this one. I started from having virtually no contact with my child. I will say the word, and I think it fits here, is it was pretty much extortion from the from my wife's attorneys. And my attorney at the time, who meant well, right? He really meant well. But he said, look, this is what the system does, and you better agree to this right now or you won't see your child at all. So I would say beforehand, I was aware, right? But now it became much more real. And then the second piece, the second piece is I actually used to run men's workshops back in the 80s. I don't know if anybody's ever familiar with the book, The Hazards of Being Male, but it is great basic reading. And I remember having, you know, it was very useful to hold these workshops. People got a great deal out of them. If I tried to run any of those workshops now, I would be, tarred and feathered and stoned is pretty much where to be looked at. I don't have the right anymore to have any, you know, my voice doesn't matter. In fact, it's, you know, right. It's clearly an annoyance because of my gender.
Yeah.
So that kind of your answer there. Yep.
Okay. So that's interesting. I'm going to go back to the male workshops thing because I am a massive advocate that we should bring those back or make them, you know, like prominent again in some way, shape or form, because I think that men need this, especially younger guys. But going back to what happened with you, so you were married at one point.
Yes.
So you were married and then there was a divorce and then there was a child custody case.
Yeah, there's a child custody case. And I still, even though I know it's friendly ears, I'm feeling a lot of shame and embarrassment coming up to say some of what this is. But it really got to the point where I was telling my ex-wife that I wasn't comfortable. The way she was behaving was, it was impossible. I couldn't breathe inside of the marriage. I was being completely discounted. And I went and pretty much told her, we need to, you know, there's something we need to do here. And she said, pretty much, don't be a P word, you know, so man what, up.
Okay, so this is, you are experiencing emotional abuse. Is that like a fair way to put it?
Yes. And I would say about 5 days before I moved out, because I already had a plan in place, mm-hmm. I wouldn't dare do it with her foreknowledge. I would never have dared do that. But about 5 days before that, there was a very large fight that I began recording stuff at this point, but she threw all my clothes down 2 flights of stairs. She was screaming. There was a few altercations, and she came down, and then she I hate to, you know, anyway, she just kicked me really hard in the groin. And it was really like we had crossed the line at that point.
Yeah.
And I remember it was about 2 days later, she came in, God, I'm feeling so ashamed of saying this. I'm sorry.
No, look, again, if you aren't comfortable, you don't have to say it.
I think it's important because I also recognize if anyone else listening, right, has had this experience, I know it helps them. And I care about that more than kind of how I'm, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So after that happened, about 2 days later, she came in and she said, look, I'm really sorry about that. And I know enough from how these abuse cycles work, but it's always around women, right? But I recognized it, even though it seemed a little odd to me, but I know this territory, but the genders are reversed, right? So there's this explosion and then some abuse, and then it's all apologetic until the tension rises again, and then it gets abusive all over again. So anyway, if there was any question in my mind, I was ready to go, you know, and I left while she was at work one day. I barely got everything out of the house by the time she came in. I had a friend with a pickup truck. We got all the stuff that was necessary to get out because that turned out to be good, because once she realized I was not in the picture anymore, I have been told, let's say through the grapevine, through back channels, let's put it that way, that this is one of the most extreme cases of custodial interference, as they put it, that the court, that the judge, that the reunification therapist had ever experienced. So it was very, very intense, and it was immediate. So anyway.
Custodial interference. Can you tell us what that means?
It's code for parental alienation. It's how the judge that I was happy. I mean, I'm going to tell you, Mike, I was very, I'm going to tell you, Brian, this was very lucky on me, because this particular judge believed that both parents have a right to their kids. I'm dealing with a judge right now who absolutely doesn't. And it's just, you know, luck of the draw, which pisses me off the worst that it's luck of the draw, right? This should be what you assume, right? But anyway, he was the one that started putting that phrase in there. Because if we start using the word parental alienation, and that's one of the things I tell people right out of the gate, don't use that phrase. Because if you use that phrase, the other side will use that against you in basically coming up with all the ways it couldn't be parental alienation, right? And what happens is they begin to obfuscate the whole issue. So it's not about this child that doesn't have a father in their life, right? It's about you making these, you know, using these phrases, which, you know, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. So it's a huge quicksand.
Yeah, you end up playing language games with these people. And then, you know, now, because like parental alienation does have a degree of emotional impact, right? Because you're talking about alienating children from their parents. So for the purposes of the legal battle, it's probably best to use a more neutral term.
Now, I want to interject very quickly. My brother, I'm just telling you, this is why I'm so driven to want to get this out. I've had so many amazing things happen to me, like just blessings. So my brother was a family law attorney, and he died unexpectedly a couple of years ago. He was 55, but I hadn't really realized until my situation what he was doing, and he was helping fathers get their kids back. And I didn't realize that he was addressing parental alienation before the term was even getting thrown around. And he was able to help me wind through the system in a way that I could say things in a proper manner, which is why on my website and my Facebook group stuff, I have lots and lots of tools for that. I just want to interject that piece that there are a lot of games you have to play right now to get anywhere in the system. And you can hate the games. I hate the games, but you know, some of it right now, it's a matter of, I got my child back in my life, and that's pretty much what the biggest thing has been, but it's still a crap deal in the long run for her, but it's better than it could have equipment. So it's from really crappy to crappy. So.
Yeah. Were there any like red flags in your marriage or your home that you kind of like look back on and say, oh, I should have seen that
yes.
to protect myself better? What are some examples of that you've seen that you, and why do you think you ignored them if you did?
I bought into the, I really want to get married and have kids. Mm-hmm. It was driving me, and it's like, that was the most important thing. Even though my parents had a horrible divorce, and even though my mother tried to alienate me from our kids, all of that I didn't pay attention to at that time. But sure, again, this one sounds stupid, but I'm saying that if anybody else is getting anything like this and you think you should brush it off, maybe it's worth a second look, right? Mm-hmm. So I remember we were dating, and there was one point where my ex at that time had said to the effect that she just can't stand men that you know, cry and whine and such, and I just... don't know why. I don't know why I didn't go for the exit right then. But that was a really early sign. Some other ones were threatening to leave when something wasn't going her way. And what meaning was, we weren't having a compromise. We were having either I saw it her way or she was going to go for the exit. Right. And I was insecure enough at that point. And again, I really thought that the be all end all of my existence as a man is to be married and have kids. That just seemed so. I was willing to do that to the extent of the red flags, which you're talking about. You know, the other big one was going to her about needing therapy and her telling me, don't be a P word about it. Right. So there were, you know, several things along the way. Those are some of the biggest ones.
Yeah. It sounds like, you didn't really have a supportive partner, just based on what you're telling me. I'm going to go out on a limb and I'm going to say that she seemed like she's kind of a bitch. But like,
it's so relieving to hear that said out loud. I'm sorry.
Well, I, you know, it's hard for guys to like call, you know, call women what they are when they behave like that. Like, I think the reason for this, and I might get a little bit philosophical here, but I think the reason for this is because when a man can't criticize the woman in his life, it's because he sees his mother in her, and it's yes. hard for them to confront their mothers. And so yeah. they don't. And then that's the, you know, I won't say that that's across the board, but I think in most cases that's what it is. So once you say no to your mom, then it'll be a lot easier. So that's what I'm basically saying, guys, go say no to your mother. And then you'll be a lot better off. Okay. So anyway,
that's very good words. Yep. That's very good advice, Brian. I'll tell you from experience. Very good advice. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. I'm sure. All right. So what's going on in your sort of legal, are you still engaged in this legal battle now?
Yeah.
And if so, yeah. where are things at? Like what's the most useful information of, regarding what you're currently doing that other men probably need to hear that you may have learned from this?
You need good information and you need patience. Those are just two of the things right now that, and yes, big picture patience. And the other thing, the biggest thing that most people miss is you got to remember this is about your child. And even though you might, you know, you want to do horrible things to your ex or you want the whole world to know how badly they've behaved, the court system doesn't care. They do not care. Now, if your ex comes in and talks about anything emotionally that you did, they're going to fawn all over her. There's a phrase I think it was Allison that actually came up with this now that I think about it. I use it all the time. It's called the threat narrative. So there's, yeah. if I'm paraphrasing her wrong, you know, but what I remember her saying is this has to do with the male threat narrative, meaning more of a masculine, but male, right? About puffing yourself up and saying how you're going to destroy someone. The female threat narrative is inventing whole cloth or exaggerating things to make them feel like or make them come across as a brutalized victim, which is really easy to do when you're a woman, right? So my ex and her attorney played that, and I'm actually, I want to say right now, while I've got this opportunity, I can't tell you how much I thank Allison all the time for that phrase, because it shifted my ability to deal with what was going on in this case, because mm-hmm. now I could look and I could see, where is this female threat narrative being run? And one of the good things, the hopeful things to say, is they're dangerous, but they're limited in their tactics. And once you understand how the female threat narrative works, then you understand what you're dealing with, right? So if you don't go after them and you talk about the best interest of the child, that's your next best way to go.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. We all talk about the threat narratives on here, because that's what a lot of, well, I'll just say that it's not only used by women who are looking to win, you know, child custody or, child support or in the divorce or whatever. It's used by, basically it's used by a lot of people to get power, to get more influence. It's used by politicians, it's used by academics, it's used by media figures. And it works because a woman in peril, it can move armies. So now you know that, and all you got to do is, well, I just have to convince them that this woman is in peril. And ironically enough, an army of men will form up and try to save her. And because it's in our nature to do that. So essentially there's like a natural evolved trait of men that's being exploited by, you know, ill-intended people, so that like women can get extra privileges and protection, as well as resources and even power. And so, of course, I'm speaking in like the macro sense, but you're speaking in the specific instance. But it's like what you're looking at happens at all different scales, you know. So yeah, I mean, it can be disgusting how it can be exploited. So So what are some of the realities that you have experienced as a father in the family court system? Like, what are some truths about this?
That's a really, really good question. I don't know how much people are going to love the answers, but it's better to know what you're walking into rather than mm-hmm. hoping it's another way. So let me start with the maxim that, is it real and is it right? I mean, I'm sorry, is it legal or is it right? Are mm-hmm. absolutely two different things, okay? They don't bear any resemblance to each other, but you have to walk away from is it right and you have to go to is it legal. And I'm gonna go into that a little bit more, because there's another father I've been working with, and the two of us have made some astonishing strides in the last couple of years with the stuff that we've been doing. But that's because we recognize, is it legal versus is it right? So one of the realities, the biggest realities is you need a support system. You absolutely have to have a support system. If you think you're going to go this alone, you will get demolished. There is zero chance of any father getting through this without having other like-minded people that are helping them through this. The other reality is that that's the place where you have to vent. You have to get your ideas out. You have to, right? That's the place, validation.
It's home base.
It's home base. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
And yep. But when you're in a courtroom, none of that matters. If you show any real emotion, you will get labeled as an abuser and you will get discounted instantly. Now, like I said, I was lucky to have a judge that did that. But some judges are so biased, by the time you walk into the room, you know, you don't even have to open your mouth. You have to dig yourself out of already being perceived that way before you even open your mouth. Right. So some of it, as I'm going to go with the overview, but please, you know, I would tell people to go to my website to get more information on this. Right. But you have to find the most effective approaches. And when you've taken on the reality that it's about what's legal, right, you start to phrase yourself in a very different way. And you have to look at it as how the court sees it. And you have to remember that even though you know all of this stuff is happening, these judges, these court officials have 100 cases, you know, I mean, 200 yeah. cases, however many come in a month. And you have to quickly get across to them what's going on in a very short amount of time. Now, I have figured out ways to do that, which is very helpful, right? But that's what that's one of the first reality is that you need to figure out how to communicate what you're communicating quickly and clearly so that someone that's got 100 other things on their plate, right, can parse it out. Because unfortunately, you know, you probably know this too as well, is you, when humans were, you know, as we've grown from our lizard brains to where we are now, we banded together. And if someone came running through the bushes back in the Stone Age, right, yelling saber-tooth tiger, our brains believed it. We didn't do any rational thinking through if there really was a saber-tooth tiger. It just got everybody's adrenaline pumping and got them running and is the same exact thing that's being pulled in a courtroom.
Yeah.
So knowing that, you got to, when someone's yelling saber tooth, you need to calmly redirect their attention. If you yell that no, there's not, that they people will react to the yelling before anything else. The most effective, so that goes into the most effective ways to present what you're, you know, what you need to present. And among them, and this is a very, you know, it might seem very simple, but it's something I recognize most people don't think about. If you know what a timeline is, it's this thing you can put on like a piece of paper or something where you can look at everything at once, right? And you start to put in events, right? So in my case, I had something called a custody reversal, which was the first one that was ever done in the court system in Wake County. What that means is that it switched from my ex having my daughter like 95% of the time to me having my daughter 95% of the time until we had a permanent custody trial. But what did it? What did it were number one, this female, this female reunification therapist had, it had to be a woman. I understand now it absolutely had to be a woman. If there's a choice, that's where to go. Cause they have a lot more power in this situation than any man does. I'm just, that's another reality.
Guys, right? Yeah. Bear that in mind. Obviously, I think that our audience knows this. If you're dealing with the court system, the fact is you're better with women on your team, not because women are better, but because the courts right. are more likely to sympathize. That's just the way it is now. I mean, that's like, you know, Camille, I think her name was Camille Vasquez. She was Johnny Depp's lawyer. I think her being a woman was a massive plus in gaining like not just the sympathy of the jury and the judge, but also of the people watching. Right. Everyone that had their eyes on the case. And that's just this is the thing. Like, it's OK to admit that we live in a world where women just have more credibility. Like that's the reality of what we live in right now. So you may as well know that and take full advantage of it if you can.
Yes. And so the second thing I did was, as I had a timeline, and what I showed on the timeline in one thing. Now, you know, it really was good for effect, but it was like 11 by 17 piece of paper because so much happened, you couldn't read it if it was any smaller. But basically I presented this to the court, and I presented it, of course, to the other side and this therapist. Now, she was on the stand, and what I was able to show was that there were 11 or 13, I have a redacted copy of it on the website, but there were 11 or 13 points where every single time there was going to be a hearing, every single time there was an investigation, like a custody stuff that you do with a therapist, if anybody's been through this, there's always like a custody evaluator. There's forensic therapy, which is dangerous in and of itself. But all of these things, right? Every time one of those things got started, one of two things happened, and it happened 11 or 13 times. Either another accusation showed up, okay, or my daughter had to go to the doctor because she would come down with something physical, right? Something mm-hmm. would happen that had to get her to the doctor. And the reason that matters is the therapist was saying that my daughter was getting demolished emotionally. Like it was not subtle. And she was starting to decompensate. She was starting to have suicidal ideation. Can you imagine a 7-year-old child? You get a phone call from a therapist saying your 7-year-old has admitted to me they want to kill themselves. I mean, that's the kind of thing that just breaks your heart in a yeah. million pieces. But this person, I did this deliberately. I had the timeline, but then I also showed her on the, you know, on the stand, and I gave her a stack of papers, and basically she has all the credibility at that point. I go, is this accurate?
Yeah.
And she looked at it, looked over it. She said, yes, this is accurate. And both of us are convinced that that was probably one of the things that pushed it over the edge, because then we could see a pattern that was going on that the court, right? Even the court has to do, because these guys were appealing decisions, right? Even this is no way, there's no way around this, right? So that was one of the most impactful things I would tell anybody and everybody. You know, it may not be fun, but you have to get everything out where somebody who's pressed for time can see what's going on. Now, the other thing is, the realities of this is how you present the information. Like, the timeline is very good, but it also has to be done within what the court cares about. Now, again, the court doesn't care about you, especially if you're a father. I'm sorry to say that, but it's really true. What they care about is the best interest of the child. So that becomes your mantra. It's all about the best interest of the child. You have to say that this is harming the child. You have to show that this is harming the child. All of these things have to be repeated over and over and over again, because mm-hmm. you may need them in court documents later or whatnot, but that becomes the thing. You're now doing what they're doing. You're repeating a very simple message, right? Their message is very simple. He's dangerous, right? You need to keep the kid away from him, right? Mm-hmm. Ours has to come back and go, not having two parents is dangerous for the kid. It has to be that simple. The other thing, if you know, the other reality is how you act around your kids, right? You can't bring them into this at all. It doesn't, if you are dying inside, you need to go to your home base, as you put it, right? You cannot have this around the kids, right? They didn't divorce either parent, okay?
Right.
So to them, that's their mother. And even though your mother's acting like a total ass, right? It's still their mother. Now, in this case, what happened to me was my daughter's now 14 and she's got a much better idea of what's happening. Way better. So I'm not as concerned about her knowing that. Now she's starting to tell me things that are going on with her mother, because she knows that I'm not going to bash her mother, but they're very difficult for her to live with, right? Which is why she wanted me out of her life, because this impinges on my ex-wife's control of her, right? Mm-hmm. So one of the things, and it's a quick tip, but there's actually something as simple as, and you don't make a joke out of everything, but sometimes remember that there are dominant emotions, right? So a dominant emotion is anger, right? Another very dominant power-taking emotion is humor, is laughter. So, you know, you've got somebody, mom says, you know, you're hoarding all this money and you have all this money that you're not giving. And then, so you're like, oh my gosh, what's she doing here? Right. And if to the degree you can show them something from your bank or something. Right. But the point is, it's like, oh my God, that's so ridiculous. Look at this. And then you go on having something fun that they want to do, because they don't want to drag this crap in the house. And the quicker you can give them an out, they start to relate to associate being with you as it's going to be okay. Right. And so it makes you safe for them. You start to undermine the messages that they're getting. Okay.
Yeah.
If you want, there's one other thing because this is something that's a little bit more, and this again takes more, there's more to this, but there are ways that most people don't know that you can fight back against very, very prejudicial rulings inside of a trial court. That is really important. And there's a friend of mine, Stetson Webster, who lives about an hour from me. Now, I will tell you quickly how I met him was, people write to me on my website. And unfortunately, a lot of people, angry, angry men, right? But also people that feel utterly defeated. And they want me to do something for them, but I can't do for them what they have to do for themselves, right? So, you know, any platform I can get right now to get this message out to more men to understand that it's okay to feel the way you're feeling, but you have to be very, very careful of how you're presenting that because of what can happen to you down the line, right? And you get so used to having your power taken away, right?
Yeah.
That you don't know how much you actually have. And what I mean is that, for example, the child support hearing that I had in March of this year, the one where I told you where I was suddenly deemed to owe child support, right? This judge did exactly what I said, that they saw I was a guy, right? And he decided I was a guy that had money, that was trying to hide money, that wasn't trying to pay his ex-wife, right? So what he did was, is I am self-employed, right? Which is a problem anyway, but for showing finances, right? So I run a store and the store has inventory, right? Well, the judge looked at all these costs of inventory as raw income, and he simply said, I don't believe you. When I said all this went to inventory, I make, you know, less than half of what you're saying I make. And he just said, literally, I don't believe you. Mm-hmm. So what he did was, is he came up, he invented an income that was so high, right? And then the second piece is, because if I hadn't known this, he would have gotten away with it. The second piece is, where I am in North Carolina, there's a statute that says if custody goes from one parent to another, right, that parent cannot owe back child support. So the moment the court reversed custody, I cannot owe back child support. And on top of that, you have to take into consideration why the child was with her mother all the time. You know, there's all this substantiated custodial interference, as Will put it, right? Parental alienation going on. That's why she had her to begin with, right? But all of this didn't matter to him. And he said that you owe this child support. I just went through it's called a hearing for reconsideration, right? It's a Rule 59, and that's in all states. Like, if you don't like the order that you got, you know it's really bad, you can file one of these things, a 59 or a 60, right? Depending on how long it's been. You can get some, you know, again, if people want to contact me and ask me questions about this, I'm more than happy to, you know, to give that to them. But there are people you can contact that can give you some very good information as to how to, you know, set these things up, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, there are places you can get your power back, but you get brainwashed into thinking that you don't. And that's part of the setup.
Yes, there's a lot of gaslighting. No, you're right. There's a lot of gaslighting about this stuff that essentially tells men that it's pointless, right? That they have no other options, and that they should just give up, or better yet, admit that they are, you know, whatever their ex-wife is claiming they are. And I think that it's tough, but I think a lot of men do. It's kind of in men's nature to just like take responsibility, but they should not be doing that for things that have nothing to do with them. Even if they think they're sparing their children, you know, because they might be like, look, I just don't want to put my kids through this anymore. So I'm just going to like go along with whatever, because this is tearing my kids apart. And I get that. But I think that if you know, especially if you know that your ex-wife is going to be worse for your kids than you, then, you know, you should be instead pounding away at, you know, what is best for the children or the child or whatever. And you know, it is tough. Like, one of the things that I tend to focus on when I hear about issues like parental alienation and divorce and child custody that a lot of people don't talk a lot about is the impact on children. And so, you know, it like the fact that your daughter was potentially suicidal, right? At seven?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, that is like, I don't know how anyone would want their kid to go through that and wouldn't simply want to, you know what, let's drop all the lawyers, let's drop all this garbage, let's work something out so that she is getting, you know, the best of both of us, right? But, you know, again, I don't want to speak for your wife's beliefs, but I do think that when it comes to divorce, women can be, they can be extremely abusive and mercenary in like what they want. I have a friend so I used to know this girl, she was a friend of mine, and she married a guy who I had never met before, but like I liked him. And so, you know, we would all go to barbecues and hang out. This is before I moved to Virginia. I lived in Chicago, and we were all very social. And I thought, oh, this guy is really cool. And, you know, and of course I knew the girl, like, you know, and then like after some time, they had two children together. I thought they were going to be together like till death. Like I didn't like, they seemed to love each other, right? Just absolutely. And then one day he like was like, yeah, I'm moving out because we're getting a divorce. And I'm like, what? Like nobody saw it coming, you know? And you know, whatever, like I get that a lot of times people just have like their own little things that they're dealing with they don't want to tell everybody about. Sure. And maybe it was building for a while. But what was kind of amazing is that he told me, because they, you know, again, they were so close. He goes to me and he says, well, we're just going to like split all of the, you know, like things amicably. Like, I'm just going to go and I'm going to take these things and I'm going to move out and buy a new house and she's going to stay here. And, you know, the kids, we're going to work out a good system that's fair and, you know, works for both of us. And we're not going to bring lawyers into this. We're not going to bring the courts into this. We're just going to deal with it on our own. And he was, you know, upset that there was a divorce because that always sucks. But like, he was optimistic about how things would come out. And he presumed, you know, that she would just go along with it. And then I learned that she was essentially working with a lawyer behind his back to essentially like take the kids. And she did. She got like, you know, I think he sees them like, you know, every other weekend or something. And that's it. And she took like more than the property that was agreed on. Like, she just ran him, you know, roughshod. And I was like, I couldn't, like, because I knew her. I was like, I couldn't believe that she would be so just heartless, right? It was almost like everything she liked about him was gone. And now he's just like a guy that she's just going to take 100% advantage of. It was like unbelievable. But, and I don't know, like, I hope he's okay. Cause I mean, I moved out of Chicago, so I haven't talked to him in a while, but yeah, it's just, I guess it's just a mess, you know, like that. And one of the things that I've known a number of guys that have been divorced and they had a similar experience. It's kind of amazing how cruel women can be when, you know, when, I don't know, like when there's resources on the line, I guess. And men never see it coming because they presume that women are not like that. But it's just not true. I mean, I'm not saying they're all like that, but like, you know, you have, they're human. Like, you know, at least treat them like that. Like that. What, could they do this? Yes, they could. Of course, you know, what were you going to say?
It's poignant what you're talking about, because I know that the guy's mindset. I figured, okay, we were going to, you know, I even thought, look, I'll rent this place where I've now been for 7 years. Guy got financially destroyed, so I am not going anywhere for right now. But I recognize, by the way, my daughter telling me that her room in my house is the one place on planet Earth she feels safe. So I'll take that any day of the week, right? But I was looking at something similar. It never dawned on me, right? But what I was going to say was that there's a lot of power imbalance, and I'm saying right now, men, and I'm saying masculine, feminine. Like, there, when there's the ability to swoop in, and you're not paying attention to anything other than yourself, you can do amazingly heartless things. So they've figured out other ways to, you know, to come in and get the system. You know, one thing I wanted to say briefly was the way that I got the extortion happened at the beginning of this, right?
Yeah.
Was they went with the nuclear option. And my brother in 20 years had never seen anything to this extent. And the upside is, I want to say at the end, he'd never seen a judge admonish someone like my ex-wife before as much as he had. Because once he had the information given to him in a way he could process and use legally, right? But basically, if people don't know what the nuclear option is, I'm going to guess there'll be at least a pair of ears here going, damn, I know what that is, right? It's when you get accused of molesting your child.
That is the way
that goes. So it was called inappropriate touch, and it kept showing up over and over and over again. And this is what happened every time, like I said, there was a court hearing or anything like this. It ran, and I'm again, needle in a haystack, the reunification therapist I ended up with, she got it in a minute. But I will tell you, it's very hard, even when it's obvious, right? Mm-hmm. Now, my friend Stetson, I was talking about, he had the next, you know, not the nuclear option, but the, you know, the megaton bomb, right? He was accused of assaulting his wife. And even though the police report showed her saying, when they asked her, did you assault me, right? She said, no, right? Got it? Does this seem about as clear to you as this could be? It's like I said, we talk all the time because we have different focuses and we're both being able to help each other move forward in our processes. It took him years to be able to get it. And he's put it in front of the appeals court because the trial court won't listen to him, right? To say, my ex said she was not assaulted. But all the lawyer has to do is inside of his ramblings, right? The one that's representing her just has to keep going and say the word. And then there was a DVPO, right? So, you know, I don't know if that's a universal term. The domestic violence protection order might be order of protection, right? A person can go into court, right? And they can say I'm afraid he's going to assault me. And without a trial, then that's it. And the longest period of time I didn't see my daughter was for about 2 months because my daughter had been getting pressured by her side of the family to say that something had happened, right? So I didn't see her, right, for months and months and months. And her family was pressuring her to make these statements, right? So that's all that had to happen. CPS came in, the CPS worker was looking at me, and you could see the way she was looking at me that she just assumed it was all true, right?
Right.
I started crying. I'm sorry that I did it, right? But then she said he got, you know, aggressive and like this is what was in the report, right?
Wait. So you started crying and they said that you were getting aggressive, like from weeping because of what you've been accused of?
The thing I did was my eyes were so, you know, I was just crying so hard.
I'm sure.
I took my glasses off and I tossed them about a foot away from me onto the chair.
Table,
right?
Or chair, yeah.
That was the aggression. And that got into the report that I threw something. So
this is why
I'm so like really hell bent on getting this information out to as many people as I can. Understand this is what you're dealing with, right? So, my friend Stetson had this to deal with, and I had to unwind this. Now, I'm not kidding you when I tell you there were six therapists, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and the local police department all came back and said, there's absolutely nothing in the child's behavior. And there's nothing in anything that I'm seeing, right, that says that this is true. And guess what? That's the best I'll ever get.
Yeah.
I will never be exonerated because the best you can do, the best you can do is not, you can't disprove a negative. So the best you can say is they can't prove that something happened. That's how it goes on the record for the rest of my life.
Yeah. And it will always be, because of the wording, something that someone could argue, right, might have, could have happened. Like in a lot of these cases, like in college campuses, young men in college campuses get accused of sexual assault or some other like sexual harassment thing. And even if there is no evidence of it, they're not, essentially, it's not put down as this woman lied about this man. It basically goes down as we couldn't prove it. And that's it.
Yep.
And so that means you might think it, you know, but yeah. I don't know. It's a mess. I'm really sorry you went through that.
Yeah, I'm me too. And if anything good comes out of it, right? I've heard, there's two ways that you can see how people are in their hearts by how when they go through horrible times. Some of them go, I'm going to make you miserable because you're making me miserable, right? Other ones like you guys, right? I'm sure you all have stories, but you're going, damn, if I'm going to let this happen to anybody else. And that's what the difference is with this, right?
Yeah.
So I wanted to just get that across that there's no exoneration, but it was enough for the court. Let's going back to, is it legal versus is it right? That was enough for the court to put enough in this order that I ended up with 50-50 custody, right? But here's the thing. The reunification therapist was adamant in saying that her being with her mother half the time is not good for her. And I have people saying things like, you should be lucky. You should say, you're lucky that you got that much, right? But I want to keep pushing. Oh, and one other thing I wanted to say was, because it's poignant what you said, was when you have, it just went out of my head. I'll come back to it later. Sorry.
I do it all the time. But I do. I'll like have like a really great point and then I'll be waiting for an opening and then like somewhere along the way it's gone. And I'm like, okay, now, what was I going to say? But anyway,
oh, yes, the kids. So yeah. When you were saying about being about the kids, this therapist said something I had never thought of before. She said, look, there may become a point where the child switches, right? Right. They switch which person, because they realize that the other parent has done horrible things and they hate that parent. Right. And then they switch, and it can be something very minor that could do that. Right. But the problem is that you end up with a kid who has still got a fundamental problem in their wiring, because now they've learned they can shut people off. And this is the issue. When a parent, that's what it was. When a parent says they want to do whatever it takes because they don't want it to affect the kids, understand you are affecting them far more profoundly by not doing something, especially if you're not in integrity with yourself. If you're willing to back a lie up, you're teaching your daughters that they can do this to guys, and you're teaching this to your sons that this is how they can get treated. It's very dangerous to do that, which is why I make that point that they don't necessarily understand the ramifications of saying, I'm going to walk away from this because I don't want to do that to my child. And then the other thing I wanted to say was, and I think this taps into a very, being male, there are certain things about us, right? They're inherent to how we're wired. So I hope this kind of gets on the back of that and supercharges that kind of visceral nature of ours. Think about this. This is probably not the generation, first generation, something like this happened to most of these couples, right? Something happened to both of them that set them both up in puzzle pieces. I know that's a hard thing to say, because it's easier to say I was just a victim. But if you're a victim, that means you have no say, right? If you recognize where you contribute to it, even if it's 1%, right? That's very helpful. So if you hold your ground, if you say that you are willing to not let this happen again, right? Because it's come down through generations. And the analogy I like to use is, it's like you've got a raging forest fire and everybody is running. The firefighters, everybody's running. And when I say firefighters, those are people that are equipped to handle fires, right? But they forget that they're firefighters. And so they run from the flames. And when they do something like, I don't want to affect my kids, guess what you just did to your kid?
Mm-hmm.
Now you're going to let the bonfire go to them because you've sloughed it off, and it gets harder with every generation. And so how many of us are willing to just go, the buck stops here? It is my nature to protect my child. That's how I'm wired. But the best way I protect them is by turning around and saying no more. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to say, like, there's a couple of things that have been going on this year because I really stood up, and now I'm really pissing people off in the court. I was at this hearing that I was just referring to, and the the lawyer for my ex started. She said, "I have never seen behavior like this in 30 years." Frankly, Brian, I'm happy. That really warms my heart. That I've actually come back and I've called her on her stuff. Right? You know, yeah. She is very, very scary. But the thing is, Brian, you never met my mother. If you met my mother, I go like, "Listen, lady, you think you're you think you're scary. You think you're terrifying. You haven't met my mother." Mm-hmm. Lucky for me that I had enough of a handle on, as you just said, by the way, I don't think I can overstate the importance of what you said about 40 minutes ago. It's you got to tell your mothers no.
Yeah.
Because when you do that, a whole something changes in you, and the people around you start changing differently because you no longer have that primal fear, right? So you decide that it's not going to happen anymore. And then that's when stuff, gets a lot harder. But if you have the right information, if you have the right home base, there's a lot you can do. And I'm going to underscore that in a conversation that I was saying with my daughter a few months ago, where she was talking about some self-harm stuff. And there was one point where I had explained to her that when I was a kid, I was in a similar dynamic, and I tried to take my own life when I was a teenager, like not much of a age different from her. And I realized in that moment, I told her what had happened. And I found out later that was extremely helpful for her because she didn't feel alone, right?
Yeah.
But she said several different things. And then there was one point where she looked at me, and then that other thing. And what she meant by that other thing was all the pressure I got to say something about you, which I knew wasn't true. And I said to her immediately, "You don't have to say a thing to me ever. Mm-hmm. This is it. We are good no matter what happens," right? If it would be helpful, right? But I just kind of want to give a little bit of a, there's some light at the end of the tunnel with some of these things, potentially, to standing up and saying no more. because I think she sees her father acting like a man, like these are the things about like how this is all that, you know, quote unquote, toxic masculinity, like, you know, right. Any female assert or any male assertiveness is now toxic, which is annoying, right, to say the least. But this is a good use of that energy to just go, I'm done, because yeah. I don't want my child to learn that that's the kind of man she's supposed to marry.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
No, I appreciate all of that. And yeah, I mean, toxic masculinity is just a way to control males again, because yeah. if women tell men that you're toxically masculine and that makes you dangerous or whatever, what men are going to do is they're going to say, well, what do I have to do so that I'm not perceived that way? Yeah. Which basically means they're just using this to make men serve them, which men are always prepared to do at any given time. So it's like weaponizing our own nature against us while claiming that we don't have that nature, right? Which is to, you know, protect and provide, in particular for women. So I do want to talk a little bit more about your daughter, because I don't want to get too like heavy into conspiracy territory, but I think that what we're experiencing with the divorce courts and the child custody thing and the single motherhood phenomenon that's sort of like very, very common, right? I think it's at least half, in if you just like look at the total population, at least half of kids are growing up without a father. Divorce rates are really high, you know, and children are feeling alienated from their parents, usually their fathers, right, most of the time. And you were just talking about, you know, like the essentially the crucial things that a father brings to their children, right? Yeah. Like it would be easy to argue that mothers, they bring something to, you know, raising children that we all accept and we all just kind of, like, you know,
water will quench your thirst or it can drown you. It's too out of balance.
Yeah. And fathers are what we're lacking right now. So, and I only say this because every time I bring this up, somebody says, there's always somebody going, well, mothers are important too. And I was like, yeah, but we have mothers. I'm not talking about what we have. I'm talking about what we don't have, you know, and
that's a supportive mentality. We say it's either or. What you're talking about is both. I get that from all of what Honey Badger Radio says. Everybody needs to be empowered for who they are. There's not a one way that's supposed to be better than the other. Right.
Yeah. So but anyway, the people get so like they get really anxious when you exclude women from something, when you're basically trying to say something positive about men. Like every time they're like, well, wait, women are important, too. It's like, yeah, we know that. Like, this is all we talk about. We won't shut up about women. I'm trying to talk about the other side that we probably need to pay attention to. And anyway.
And admittedly, I just realized I just did that with you. I couldn't let you finish the sentence without coming in and coming in with including them in it. No, yeah, I'm just saying.
It's really deep rooted. Yeah. This is what I'm saying. It's hard for people to like simply say men are important for these reasons without someone or even themselves saying, well, I'm not saying that women aren't important. It's like, no, nobody believes that. Okay, let's stop that. Yeah. Nobody believes that. But what I'm worried about, and you know, in the case of your daughter, because if you look at the wider patterns of how children are impacted by not having their father in their life, by being alienated from, maybe they were involved in a really ugly divorce where they saw the worst parts of both parents, right? Which can happen because, you know, divorce is difficult. People start backstabbing each other. Like, they, you know, they pull out all the stops. And even though there may be good intentions, like, look, I think that I'm the best person to raise my child, the child will, you know, they'll move away from them. They'll basically like grow in distance. And what I think that does is it actually makes the child vulnerable to exploitation from other groups that have nothing to do with the marriage, right? So, you know, they get convinced by their teachers in school that the problem in their divorce is the men. And they'll believe it because they're looking for easy answers to complex questions. Maybe they don't feel like they can go to their parents, you know, and so they go to these other authority figures, or the other authority figures sweep in and they say, well, I have the answer to your problem. And, you know, they fill their heads with lies. And this is what I think happens in, and I'm going to get a little bit political, I guess. This is the kind of stuff that I think happens when you have these kind of extremist activist groups that are, yes, you know, running around trying to save the planet, trying to defeat the Nazis, yes, whatever it is they think they're doing. And I think a lot of it is the fact that they, you know, their home life is a mess. Their parents aren't getting along, or maybe they don't even know who their dad is. You know, that's most likely the case. And they're angry at the world for being, like, ignored or left out. And, you know, like with, I guess what I'm saying is I hope that nothing like that happens to her, because there's definitely going to be pressure. And
I would say that you're right about that. And really, I kind of have an epiphany about what I like, just kind of what I get a sense of what Honey Badger Radio is like, what all of this is about as I'm talking to you. And it's about, if people aren't rooted in who they are, like, who they are, all of what that means to be a woman, to be a man, right? Then they become really vulnerable to outside influences manipulating them. And that it's almost, you know, I get it. It's men's, you know, if supporting men's, but the issue is right now, you can't do what you're doing to men and expect this world to function, because you can't suppress an energy. You can't suppress a gender out of existence and expect anything to work in the long run. I think what you said is,
yeah, I said especially with men, because, you know, it's men that keep everything running. Now, maybe like right now, most of the men that keep everything running are too old or too busy to pay attention to any of this like stuff happening in our culture with the way we treat men. But eventually those guys are going to be retired, and the millennials, you know, the men who have been fed all of this are going to be looking to, you know, be a part of that as well. And so how are they going to do that if their identity is all but completely destroyed? Right.
Yes. Yeah, I agree with you. I grew up very liberal. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to circle back really quickly, because I mean, you said, you know, something at the beginning was, I told you I ran workshops for men. And this was with a very liberal group of, it doesn't matter. My religion is, you know, is how I was raised. If anybody knows Unitarian Universalist.
Oh, yeah. I know.
Right. So I grew up steeped in that culture. But in 1984, when I was running workshops, you know, The Hazards of Being Male, we had a robust attendance, and there was a women's workshop, and the two of us came together at the end. And this was kind of how we worked this. Right. And it was all about the balance. But if I said any of that stuff now, right. And I do, when I post things on Facebook, I will admit I've gotten a little jaded, because I get crickets now. Like I was talking about the Johnny Depp trial. Nobody wants to hear, even their supposed long-term decades old friend that they know inside and out, they don't want to hear, right, that that something's really wrong, right? Because it doesn't go with the narrative that it's all about men are dangerous, right? And I couldn't agree with you more about getting more of that kind of, you know, those types of workshops. I feel right now we'd have to have them in clandestine basements or something where you can't.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I have people, by the way, that talk to me offline, right? Especially men friends, right? Some of them are ministers stuff inside the organization. They go, man, I totally, totally get what you're saying. But they won't say it out in public. They don't want to lose their, you know, whatever church they're at. They don't want to get, you know, drummed out of the, you know, out of the religion, whatever it is, because they're too scared to say. And I go, I've said more than once, isn't that a real problem for you? That you don't feel like you can say what's on your mind?
Well, yeah, that's
just
a problem.
Orwellian.
It is. But most of it comes from the self. Like, most people self-censor now because they're, they just don't want to rock the boat, you know? And so they're constantly trying to figure out, like, okay, how are we framing the conversation so that it offends as few people as possible, but allows me a little bit of space to say what I actually believe, in the hopes that it won't, you know, cross that line. And all of this, like, overthinking of all of it, I think that it's harmful. I mean, it kind of makes it impossible for us to express our ideas. And the thing is, like, thinking itself does not happen passively when you're alone. Like, I know a lot of people Correct. Would disagree with me, and they would say, well, of course, anyone can think at any time. But when you're really thinking Yep. about something, you need another person so that you could share your thoughts with them, and then they can Yep. share their thoughts about your thoughts. That's how you actually think, because your ideas, they'll evolve. They'll change, Yep. you know, even if it's in the tiniest... Yeah, but yeah, it makes them sturdier. It makes them sturdier. But even if it only changes it in like a tiny way, it yep. can have a much bigger long-term impact. Like, if you're just thinking to yourself all the time, how do you know if you're right or wrong? Like, you don't, because there's no one to confirm or push back, because you're alone. So you're just like, well, I know that's right. And you can just believe whatever you want to believe, because there's no one around to tell you that you're wrong. So thought to
Yeah, that's
me,
what I meant. If I'm going to make a point, I'm either going to adjust the point, or I'm going to be more resolute in it, because I now have, you know, conflicting or, you know, evidence that goes pushes against that,
yeah.
which is really, you know, I remember saying to somebody, yeah, and this was kind of, you know, this was at the beginning when things started really just falling apart with me and a lot of the liberal friends that I grew up with. But I remember talking to them about the red pill, right? And like, you know, have you seen any of this? Isn't this the first person they go? The first thing they said was Cassidy Ray is a darling of the right. And so because oh once God. We got this, we associate them with conservatives. Well, what they did, right? It's a critical thinking, monstrous critical yeah. thinking error to say, okay, number one is I've never seen her do anything other than talk about, because they're the only ones that are listening, right? That's the point. But I've seen her talk about what, you know, what this is about. And if she tried to do it in a, she will get, you know, discounted and thrown out of the conversation in an mm-hmm. instant. I think we're talking about that, like with the thinking is man, that, well, that's, you know, that's a big problem.
Yeah. So the thing that's funny about the Cassie J thing, other than the fact that she's definitely not on the right. I know her, and that's just not her. But that doesn't matter, because it doesn't matter if the person sharing the information is like crazy far right, libertarian, anarcho-capitalist, far left, communist, whatever. It doesn't matter, because if what they're saying is true, then it's true, right? Like, it has nothing to do with, well, the politics of this person basically makes their beliefs, you know, untenable. It's like, no, if they're making a claim, none of that other stuff matters. Let's look at the claim, and if it's true, then it's true. And if it is, then we can, maybe there'll be an argument about how to solve the problem. That's usually yes. when politics comes in. But in general, somebody's statements are not invalid simply because of their political alignment. This is one of the biggest problems we have right now, because nobody is allowed to like say, hey, this is a problem, I'd like to address it, and here are some suggestions. And then like other people are like, you can't bring up that problem, like men, right? You can't talk about men. That's far right stuff. And I think the only reason why they even say that's far right stuff is because it scares people away. Like that's literally why they say it.
It's the saber-toothed tiger with the cavemen. You could say far right and everybody runs away. Remember, like the visceral brain?
Yeah, exactly. That's it. Again, like, you don't even, like, if I hear that, I just laugh and I say, well, look, you clearly don't want me to walk out of the cave so I can see what's outside. And so you're just calling me far right, and you don't actually have an interest in not just discussing these problems, much less solving these problems, because the only thing you seem to want is to keep things as they are, which is essentially living a lie, and you want everyone else to participate in it. And the truth is, there are, at least in the case of men's issues, which I think, frankly, even though I have like opinions on all kinds of issues, you know, like political and social and cultural, I think the men's issues are the most important, like easily above all. And not only because it's not only because men obviously need help, okay, in a number of ways, but also because it will affect women. And so, you know, if we ignore what's going on with men, eventually women are going to start suffering. In fact, they're suffering now because there's like, you know, a growing number of childless women that are middle-aged and they don't understand why their life sucks. And, you know, and they're lonely and they're upset and depressed and it's just getting worse. And that's basically just the tip of the iceberg. And it's because of men. It's because they've lost access, right? And so, and again, the men that, you know, many of them are choosing to stay out of the stuff, and I can't blame them. I can't blame them for that. Like, it's like, yeah, I get it, dude. So I think that this is why I talk about, like, men's issues primarily. And to go back to what you were saying about, like, clubs or some kind of community thing, I think it's absolutely crucial. So you're in North Carolina, yes, right? I'm in Virginia. I'm in southwestern Virginia. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So I was wondering.
What? Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. I was wondering if we could meet up.
Well, we can, sure. So what I was thinking about is I haven't had a lot of time to, like, explore my area, but I want to work with men more directly. And you know, one like Paul Elam. Do you know who Paul Elam is?
Oh, yeah, I sure know. Boy, that guy doesn't make a lot of friends.
No. But I gotta admit though, I'm a little jealous. But I'm the kind of person that makes friends really easily. So Paul lives around.
I like what you said before. I don't mind getting in trouble, and you're. I'm going to tell you, this experience has even made me feel more comfortable with getting in trouble. So I appreciate
that. Oh, well,
that.
There you go. I'm not going to say I hope you get into more trouble, but
No. I got to make more noise because one of the other things that I don't have going for me is that I'm not as well known yet, right? So I'm working on getting myself out there more publicly because the other thing is like cockroaches run when the light goes on, right? So if it becomes something where someone's going to get embarrassed, that's going to maybe force them, right? We know the arc of justice bend, or we, you know, the arc moves towards justice, but a little extra light shone on the on the problem can make it happen a little bit faster. And I absolutely would love to talk to you more about if there's anything that we could maybe collaborate on to help, you know, make this available to people. Cause, you know, and also we're online, there is something about if you can, you know, you can talk to people directly and you can have that back and forth. It's much more powerful.
Absolutely. The reason why I brought it up is because I really think it's important that men form fraternity with other men. Yes. You know, especially if there is a way to sort of like attract younger men. And when I say young, I mean like guys in their 20s and, you know, because like the thing is, I notice that men right now, young men especially, are looking for answers. They're looking to learn about their masculine self. They're trying to, you know, understand what it means to be a man. And they know, and this is what I love, they know that like all of the sort of mainstream cultural institutions are not helping. Like they're just demonizing men. They're calling them toxic. They're calling them rapists. Like it's just a part of their nature, right? They're using threat narratives to keep men apologetic, subservient, and willing to like essentially do whatever it takes to clear themselves of original sin for being born a man. And they're learning about this in school and online and in the media and from the academics. It's everywhere. And so they're looking in other places. And I mean, I'm glad that they are aware enough that something is wrong, but I sometimes worry that they might be looking in places that aren't as constructive, you know, like, and I don't blame them because this is the condition that they have been put in. So this is why I think fraternity with other men that's constructive and positive and also like legitimately helpful. So it's not just like teaching men to stop being men so that they stop doing bad things to women, for example.
That's my point. I'm going to tell you right now, my friend Stetson will absolutely, you'll want to talk to this guy. He's absolutely ripe for this. Like we realize we're putting together a website now that I don't want to put it out there because it's not ready, but it's about putting all of these things in one place because we need to get it so that everybody's got information they can rely on. And that's why when you said at the beginning, and I appreciate you giving me the out to not go into what I was, you know, having that feeling about, but I want men, man, you've really verbalized that really well. I want younger men to know that there's another alternative. And I want younger men to have access to information like the stuff that I've got here, which is real information. It's about you don't give up one iota of who you are, right? Mm-hmm. And part of the issue is that when you go inside the parental alienation literature, there are people in there that are still pushing this threat narrative. So they're telling you that you have a right to your kids, but the other side of their mouth, it's still, you've got a problem being a man. And those things kind of get interwoven into the messages. So you got to have the whole package. You got to have all of that. Cause if you can't be yourself, you can't do anything constructive, because you'll always be more susceptible to outside things coming in and trying to run you.
Yeah, that's exactly. Really well, that's the thing, like that. I think that's the most important crisis that we're facing right now. So we have gone over time, which is fine, because I enjoyed the talk. I do have a couple of super chats which were sent in. So let's take a look at those. Meredith G gives us $5 and says, honey for the Badgers. Thank you, Meredith. Duncan Alexander gives us 70 czars, which I believe is South African currency. Thank you, Duncan. And he says, censoring what others say arbitrarily is a form of hostage taking. Yeah, and there's other ways to do it. Like, basically, you make people feel like they can't be honest. You don't actually have to censor them, because they'll do it to themselves. And this is like a major obstacle that men and women really have to face, because everyone wants to be liked, they want to get along, right? And to speak the truth means you're going to make enemies, so you have to be brave, be courageous, and say the truth no matter what they say, even if you're not entirely sure that it's true. Like, I know that sounds weird, but maybe you just have an inclination or a gut feeling or some instinct that says, I think that this might be coming from this. You should be able to say that, right? You can put whatever caveat. You could say, well, look, I don't have hard evidence of this, but here's the reason why I believe this, and here's what I'm going to put out there. Because the only thing that can come out of that is good. The only thing, because someone will either say, yes, I agree with you, and here's my evidence, or they'll say, I disagree with you, and here's my evidence, and then you'll say, okay, then I guess I'm going to alter my position. It's as long as people are trying to be honest, then there's no issue. And then I got a super chat from Amasang, or Super Chow, for $5. And he says, so earlier YouTube recommended a movie starring comedian Ernie Kovacs. And I remembered he had to fight to reclaim custody of his children after they were kidnapped by their mother, who had been determined, quote, mentally unstable, end quote. Yeah, well, there's lots of stories like that. But again, we have this bias it's something that we evolved with towards women. So it makes even the law difficult, because we're constantly fighting our programming. So, all right. So those are all the super chats. Do you have any final thoughts you wanted to put out there, Mike, or, tell people where they can find you? I put all of the links to all of your places in the description so people can go look at them.
What I would say is that, there are things you can do. And I have people that I get input from on a regular basis, right? Because I need that, what you're talking about, right? I need that good input. And there's always, you can't control outcomes, but you can control your own integrity and your own behavior. And when you have good information, like the information I've gotten over the course, I realize I've been in this litigation 8 years, and I have been fortunate enough to find people that are really, they've really got something functional going on, right? Mm-hmm. If you get good information, right, and you run with that good information, and you have patience with it, because you know that you do not want your sons and daughters to experience what you've been experiencing, right? You say the buck stops here, right? that can tap into all of that strength you've got, even when you're getting pressure to back down, that you recognize my children are worth more than that, right? Mm-hmm. My quality of my own life is worth more than that. So when you're saying like Ernie Cohen, there's even a quote from Albert Einstein. He sent some message when he won the Nobel Prize, right? He said something to the effect of, I would give you all the money that I got if I could just see my kids again. And he was talking about to his ex-wife. The issue is everybody wanting to not cause waves has caused this bonfire to keep going, and we can stop. We've never been more connected than we are right now, right? Mm-hmm. In the last 7-8 years, the ability to connect, like you and I, right? We would have never, ever met if this wasn't here. And now I feel like there's an ally here and some real potential for something. And as we can all come together, we start to share good information, as you've put it, right? Mm-hmm. There's a lot that can be done. Don't buy into the hype that, you know, there's nothing that you can do. There is a lot that you can do.
Yeah. So. Yeah. All right. Yep. No truer words have been spoken in the last hour. Well, maybe in the last hour. All right, guys. So I'm going to close it out here. Thank you guys for coming on today's episode of the Fireside Chat. If you guys like this video, please hit like, subscribe if you're not already subscribed. Hit the bell for notifications so you know when our streams go live. Leave us a comment. Let us know what you guys think about what we discussed on the show. And most importantly, please share this video, because sharing is caring, but also because sharing is like, I think it's the best way to, get around the algorithm and get more people that would otherwise have never seen our content to possibly see it. Because, you know, I know that our channel's being suppressed. I know that they're... And I'm not saying that it's because we're special. I think that, you know, they have an algorithm. It's designed to work a certain way. And any content that YouTube thinks is, I guess, content that goes against their idea about reality, their idea about what the broader narrative is going to run into struggles. Like, it doesn't matter what we were talking about. We could be, you know, like, I don't know, vaccine critical or something, and we'd be facing the same problem, because it's like a bunch of categories and they all need to be suppressed. But the conversation about men is the most important conversation right now, like hands down, easily. We could be on the verge of war and I would still say yes, but like, we gotta worry about men, because men are the people we're gonna need if we're gonna win a war. So as just an example. All right, well, anyway, thank you guys so much for coming on today's show. I look forward to your comments, and I will talk to you all in the next video.
When you make decisions for your company, you always look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing and shipping to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your process to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, books, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart if you sell online. Schedule package pickups through the dashboard and automatically see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are, even on the go. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other business decision makers with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus free postage, and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky?
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.